Welcome, everybody, back to the Common Anomaly Podcast. I'm your host, Stuart James. Joining me is Clayton James, and this is episode number 9. Today, we're going to be discussing all about Mars. Hey, brother, how's it going?
Good. I'm glad to be back.
Great. So I'm excited about today's topic. I believe when we discussed this, we kind of just very loosely just said Mars. Let's just do Mars. And we didn't really say what about Mars. And I think we both just went off in separate directions this week and just started taking in everything there is to know about the red planet. What do you think? What did you discover this week?
Well, I didn't do that voice. I think how it started, if I recall, is we were... I'd sent you a link to this news story about Mars.
That's right.
This square-shaped archaeological ruin.
So do you want to start there with that story, since that's how we started, or do you want to save that for later?
Oh, I think we should end with that one.
Should we end with that one?
Because okay. I came up with some interesting stuff on that one.
Okay, perfect, great. Yeah, you're right. We've kind of been batting that story back and forth for a couple weeks now, thinking, oh, we got to work this into the show somehow. And then we missed it and we forgot about it. And now we're going to devote a whole episode to Mars anomalies.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, Mars is very interesting. I've always found it interesting just from if you take away all the mystery and anomalous photographs and that sort of thing, just from a purely astronomical sense, it's very interesting. It's our neighbor in the solar system. It's a lot like Earth. In the distant past, it was a lot more like Earth. And I think that's really curious that, you know, there was a time when perhaps there was two habitable planets in our solar system and what could be left behind there. So I think everybody kind of loves Mars. It's kind of baked into pop culture as well. You know, there's Mars Attacks and multiple horror movies about the red planet. So what do you think about Mars?
Well, my interest in Mars started from kind of an interesting place. You mentioned it's definitely out there in the pop culture. And, you know, when I was young, as you know, a teenager in the 90s, I was obsessed with the video game Doom.
Mm, right.
And, you know, the plot line of that game is, you know, this company, the Union Aerospace Corporation, they are constructing colonies on Mars, and it's two moons. And what they find is evidence of an ancient civilization on Mars, and they find all this technology. And in their experiments with this ancient technology, they open a gateway to hell.
And, yeah.
And demons invade the Mars base, and that's, you know, the plot line of that game.
Yeah.
You're the space marine, and you've got to go hunt down and kill all these demons that are invading the Mars base. But I found that plot line, like, absolutely fascinating, you know, an ancient civilization on Mars. And then, you know, finding out later on in life that, oh, there is actually some meat to this story of ancient ruins on Mars.
Oh, okay. I thought you were going to say the hell portal. And I was like, there's some meat to that?
I mean, maybe.
Okay.
We'll see when we get there.
Okay, well, you've got very thorough notes as usual. So why don't you hit me with what you got there based on ancient ruins on Mars?
Ancient ruins on Mars. Well, I mean, this all started with an astronomer in the 19th century, an Italian astronomer. His name was Giovanni Schiaparelli. And astronomy back then, obviously not quite as refined as it is today.
Mm-hmm.
If you were looking at, say, Mars, you had to wait for perfect atmospheric conditions to even see the planet in any sort of detail. And you could usually only see it in any detail for a few moments.
Hmm.
before the atmosphere would haze over again and it would just become a blur. And you had to very quickly kind of sketch down what you saw.
Yeah.
And what Schiaparelli...
obviously telescopes just weren't as powerful.
Yeah. And what Schiaparelli supposedly saw was he saw what he called canali on Mars, you know, a series of interconnected straight lines. And this was, you know, later popularized by an American astronomer, Percival Lowell, who very much took up the work and continued it and you know, directly translated canali to canal, which has a certain connotation to it of artificial design.
Right.
And, you know, back in that time, that idea entered the popular culture and inspired a lot of science fiction.
Yeah.
And really captured people's imaginations, including a young man by the name of Robert Goddard, who is, I mean, today we...
the Goddard Space
Institute. Yeah, we recognize him as kind of one of the fathers of modern rocketry. And Robert Goddard, he was absolutely fascinated with all of this. And what originally got him into wanting to develop rockets and, you know, develop space travel was he wanted to go to Mars. Privately, that was his goal. Publicly, he publicly stated the more modest goal of reaching the moon.
Right.
So
it's been in even the scientific astronomical zeitgeist, this idea has been implanted for hundreds of years.
Yeah.
That there's potentially a civilization on Mars.
Yeah.
Until we actually went there, right?
Yeah. I mean, up until the point we actually sent the Viking probes to Mars, you know, we didn't know what was on Mars. There was all this theory that it was, you know, it was like Earth. It was habitable. There was a civilization. Look, they built these canals. There's obviously a technological civilization there.
Yeah.
And then we sent the Viking probes there, and
burst everybody's bubble.
Yeah. So it's a dead, frozen, barren kind of world. But, you know, the Viking probes, you know, one landed on the planet, and there was an orbiter that, you know, basically imaged the entire planet, like kind of like Google Earth, only for Mars. And that brings us to 1976 with the discovery of the face on Mars. That got everyone really excited.
Yeah. Well, and just before we dive into the face, because everybody, we have to talk about the face.
Yeah.
We have to get into the face. Obviously, that's going to take up a certain amount of real estate on the show. But before we go there, I thought it really interesting. Because you do, and even today, people still talk about, well, what we discovered when we finally went to Mars is it's a barren, desolate rock and there's nothing there. You know, but what we're kind of, in a similar vein to on our previous episodes, what we actually find is over the past several decades, as we've continued to send more and more probes and better imaging satellites, what we're finding is actually, it's not that dead. It's still geologically active. There's even potential water flows very near to the surface, even today. It's got polar ice caps. It's got weather. Clouds occasionally appear.
Yeah.
Even though it's very thin atmosphere, there's very little left of Mars's atmosphere. So my mind kind of, and it's kind of widely accepted that, you know, Mars died a very slow death with its atmosphere being, and magnetosphere being slowly eroded over billions of years.
Which is interesting because I was talking earlier about Percival Lowell.
Yeah.
And he was, you know, going on and on about these canals on Mars.
Yep.
And his theory was that these canals were being constructed by this, you know, technologically advanced but dying civilization. He thought Mars was dying.
Yeah.
And these Martians were running out of water, and they were constructing these giant canals to, you know, transport water from the polar caps to the population in the equatorial regions.
Yeah. Well, and the equator on Mars still gets quite warm even today. Like, it can be, you know, up to, I think, 30 degrees in the Martian summer near the equator. Like, it can be warmer than we have here on Earth in those regions, but then it gets much colder at the polar, in the polar regions.
And I mean, even here in Calgary, you know.
Yeah, we've had days where it's been warmer on Mars.
Yeah, we have days, you know, usually in February, where they'll say, well, it's colder in Calgary today than the average temperature on Mars.
Yeah. Yeah, I believe it. I believe it some days. But anyway, so I brought that up as an interjection just before we dive into the face stuff, just because I feel like the more we discover about Mars, the more that we find it's not quite as dead, you know, as we thought it was. It's not quite as barren as we thought it was. And it, in my mind, I think, well, maybe even in smaller timescales away in the past, could it have been much more active than we see today? And when we, maybe 10,000 years ago, there was still, you know, significant amounts of water pooling on the surface under the right conditions. And I've even seen some stuff online, and this is going back years ago, that claim that, like, the Valles Marineris, you know, much deeper than the Grand Canyon. It's, like, everybody knows this feature.
You
can't miss it when you look at an image of Mars. It's this massive scar. It's a very deep canyon system. I heard it theorized that there's pockets of microclimates that can exist in some of those structures, those intricate cave structures, where even like fog will accumulate within the Valles Marineris and you'll get like frost, and that there could be these microbiomes, these microclimates, where there's just little pockets where it's much more suitable for, you know, simple life to exist.
I mean, we have microclimates like that here on Earth, like at the bottom of the ocean. You've got, you know, geothermal vents and you know, these extremophile microbes.
Yeah.
You know, live around them, you know, and it's deep enough in the water that, like, no sunlight gets down there.
Yeah.
But they have kind of their own enclosed little biome.
Yeah.
In this microclimate.
Yeah. And I mean, surely it's a big planet. There's enough opportunity there for these little pockets, these caves, to exist. And it maybe even subsurface, because Mars isn't as dense as Earth. So there could be huge cave systems in the subsurface, where you could have moisture accumulating and life thriving. So we won't really know until we get there. But maybe someone was there already. You know, maybe somebody built a pyramid or a face. So let's get into the face stuff.
Well, I think if you're looking at Mars through the lens of a, you know, in air quotes, exo-archaeologist.
Right.
If you're looking at Mars through that lens, the discovery of the face on Mars is where the ambiguity begins.
Mm-hmm.
But it certainly doesn't end there.
Absolutely.
I think the more we look at Mars, the more we learn that we don't know about Mars.
Yeah.
And I spent all week looking at pictures and maps of hypothesized ancient ruins on Mars. And it is, some of it's very compelling, but it's all very frustratingly ambiguous.
Yeah, it's a rabbit hole for sure. I mean, I've definitely spent as well hours kind of sifting through. There's some really interesting dedicated YouTubers to finding anomalies. And yeah, I find it really frustrating because I'm sure everybody knows what pareidolia is. You know, it's our brain's ability to look for patterns. And that's how a lot of these things are written off of, like, well, if you look hard enough, you're going to find something interesting in any picture that your brain can attribute to something being artificial. And I definitely see people doing a lot of that.
Yeah, yeah.
Where there's this one guy I follow, and like, he'll pull up frames from Curiosity or whatever, and he's trying to explain to me, you know, the viewer, about how I'm looking at a whole subdivision and that there's streets, and it all seems perfectly clear to him, and I just see, you know, a cliff face.
Yeah. On the subject of pareidolia, you know, there's definitely a lot of that going on, but mm-hmm. you also see some...
genuinely curious.
Some really yeah. striking features on Mars, and I think we are quick sometimes to just hand wave dismiss that as pareidolia.
I agree.
You know, if you go to Wikipedia and you bring up the page on pareidolia,
you see the face of Mars.
Half of yeah. that, like, the first picture you see is the face on Mars, but half of that entire page is dedicated to things seen on Mars.
Right.
Half of yeah. that article is.
Yeah.
But you know, pareidolia, it's a function of our brains, and it exists for a reason. It's our brain's tendency to recognize patterns in the noise, specifically faces.
Yeah.
And we evolved this ability because, you know, it protected us in a very dangerous environment. You need
to be able to see a snake for the trees.
Yeah, we want to be able to recognize a predator lurking out there in the dark
mm-hmm.
right away. And our brains will err on the side of caution. Our brains don't like ambiguity.
Yeah.
If it kind of looks like a face, we'll tend towards seeing a face.
And like you said, it's frustrating. And that's the frustrating part about this, is because all we have is pictures. I mean, I could walk down the road and you know, right here on Earth,
mm-hmm.
and I'll see something just down the street in front of me where I'm like, what is that? That looks weird. And, you know, take a few steps closer and I realize, you know, it's, you know, something completely normal, right?
Yeah.
It's so when you're looking at, you know, not ideal image quality photos of the surface of a planet that's, you know, so far away, it's just frustrating because it feels like we really won't be able to get anywhere until you've got real boots on the ground.
Yeah.
And we'll forever be stuck in this limbo of, well, is it just pareidolia? And I do get frustrated with that as well. I think, yeah, you can attribute a lot of what people see to pareidolia. And definitely, yeah, I look at some of the images and I go, that is so, so vague. There's so much room for interpretation there.
Yeah.
But on the other end of the spectrum, yeah, it feels like just the go-to excuse. I was complaining to you. I put an image in our show notes. It's a screenshot from Google Mars. I was searching around and you said you had hunted down the face on Mars.
It took almost an hour.
Yeah. It took me about 30 seconds to find a different face on Mars. But like I showed you, and I was trying to illustrate a point, and I'll put it in the show notes so people can see, it's not the face on Mars, but it is something that looks sort of like a
face. I think that looks terrible.
It does look terrible. And but I put it there to prove that point, that there's a difference between pareidolia and something that's genuinely interesting,
mm-hmm.
right? So, yeah, you can look for 5 minutes and you'll be able to find something that sort of looks like a face just about anywhere. But when we're talking about the face on Mars, there's a lot more interesting aspects to it going on. It's very symmetrical, yeah. for one thing.
So when I wasn't on Google Mars. I was on another, I forget what it's called. I sent you the link.
ESRI.
It's pretty much the same thing. Basically like Google Earth, but there it's Mars.
Yeah.
And I wanted to see this morning if I could find the face on Mars, just as an exercise before doing this show. And it was really difficult because the face on Mars, it's in a region called Cydonia. And there's actually a lot of interesting stuff going on in this region. We can talk about it a bit later.
Okay.
But the region itself was hard to find because for some reason on that map, it wasn't labeled. I had to kind of look for regions that were adjacent to it and kind of go from there. I had to use other kind of geographical landmarks to try and pinpoint where Cydonia was.
I had to
look it up on Google, like, where's the face on Mars? Well, it's like this direction from Bamberg Crater, it's called. It's between Bamberg Crater and this other crater. So I'm like, okay, Bamberg Crater is actually named on that map. You can find it. That other crater, it wasn't named on that map, so I had to kind of scan around. But I did eventually find Cydonia and eventually found the face. And it was interesting, as I was looking, once I found that region, how much it just jumped out at me as something interesting.
Yeah.
Not just the face. The face is very striking.
Yeah.
When you see it.
The Viking probe photo is infamous because it does look so striking.
Yeah.
And the argument there is it's just the way the light fell on it, you know, and then we've sent subsequent imagers in the 90s. But yeah, what you see there is and that's used to basically debunk this issue. So a lot of people see this as long debunked, that those imagers in the 90s got sharper photographs and it looks less, far less remarkable. But if you dig, even just if you scratch just a little beneath that surface, you find that it's plain as day for anyone to see that they've used kind of image filters.
Yeah.
To which just has to be an intentional downplaying.
Yeah. Yeah.
Of this line of inquiry, right? Which doesn't, that creates the wrong impression in my mind, right? Yeah. If you don't want people to talk about something, you shouldn't intentionally try and obscure the facts around it.
The Streisand effect. Yeah. You're familiar with the Streisand effect?
Yes. Yeah, that's exactly right. Do you want to explain it to our audience?
Okay, in brief, Barbara Streisand, the singer, she noticed that her house, her mansion, was very visible on Google Earth and Google Street View, and she didn't like that. So she basically tried to sue Google to have the image of her house removed from Google Maps and Google Earth and Google Street View. Because she didn't want people seeing her house. She didn't want people seeing where she lived. And this...
It had the opposite effect.
Yeah, this case got some media attention.
Yeah.
And as a result, everyone started wanting to look at her house on Google Street View. Whereas previous to that...
Or probably like, now going to her house in person.
Just like, I saw the numbers once, I forget, but, you know... After this case got media attention, like on Google Street View, like that location, her house, had millions and millions of people viewing it.
Yeah.
Where previous to that,
who would have bothered?
There was only three views. Only three people had looked at that location, two of which were Barbara Streisand's lawyers.
So yeah, and so now NASA is basically, or other entrenched, legitimate scientific authorities are kind of obscuring this matter intentionally, because I can understand why they would not like the attention on this and people to be obsessed with that. You know, they want people to be interested in the legitimate scientific work that they're doing and not get carried away with this or the other. But if there's something, if there's genuinely nothing interesting there, then why do you need to go through the trouble of intentionally obscuring photographs or like you say, not labeling this region on publicly searchable maps, right? Like, why do that?
Yeah, I was surprised immediately on this map I was using Cydonia, the region was not labeled at all.
Yeah.
It, like every other region on the planet, it was something I could click on. It was something I could just zoom
in on. And, yeah.
But Cydonia, I had to find it by myself. It wasn't even labeled. And it's a very well-known, much talked about region on Mars that has a lot of interesting stuff going on there, not just in terms of, you know, the face or other interesting structures surrounding the face.
Yeah.
But just in terms of the geology of it, it has lots of ancient river valleys going through it. Lots of, you know, interesting geology there. I mean, I'm surprised NASA's never sent a rover there.
Yeah.
Certainly there's been the interest, but it feels like there's just a bunch of signs around Cydonia now, that whole region, that say nothing to see here.
Yeah.
and even on the just map, makes
people more curious to be,
you know,
interested in this mystery.
Even on the map, I was looking at, you know, I found the face. I found lots of, you know, interesting structures around the face. But even on the map, you try to zoom in on certain things, and it looks like they've been intentionally blurred out.
Mm.
Like there's a giant patches where the image resolution just lowers down to complete garbage, and you can't tell what's there.
Well, and I mean, should acknowledge that we don't have perfect images.
Yeah, and that's right? That's not necessarily done intentionally.
Yeah, but it is curious when it's like, well, everything else in this area looks really crystal clear and pristine, and then this is one spot where, you know, people have a lot of interest, and it's really blurry for some reason. It's just weird.
Yeah, right? it's
curious.
It's interesting.
Yeah.
It's not incriminating at this point, but we'll call it interesting.
Yeah. And again, for me, the frustrating part is, you know, an image will never be good enough. Like, we have to go there. Right.
Yeah, I mean, the Mars rovers, we've sent a few, you know, we've had Spirit and Opportunity, Curiosity, Perseverance is the newest one.
Mm-hmm.
The one with the little helicopter.
Yeah.
Which the helicopter crashed. I was really sad about that.
Oh, did it crash?
Oh, yeah. I was
didn't hear about that.
Yeah, I was following it really close. That little helicopter, it made, I think, like 70 or 80 successful flights,
mm-hmm.
which was really cool. But it eventually, because it was relying on the actual rover to relay commands to it.
Right.
And it lost contact with the rover at one point, and it crashed. And
Damaged irreparably? Couldn't the rover just turn around and go pick it up?
No, it crashed, and helicopter blades were ripped off of it.
So it's a total loss.
Yeah.
That's too bad.
But, you know, we've got these rovers, and they've got they're described as, you know, high resolution cameras on them.
Yeah.
High resolution, it's all relative, you know. High resolution for something, you know, we can strap to a rocket and can survive, you know, a 6-month journey to Mars and survive, you know, an atmospheric entry and probably a rough landing. High resolution cameras for what can survive that. But the cameras on the Martian rovers, I mean, I got a new cell phone 2 years ago. Got the Samsung S23.
Okay.
So before that, the cell phone I had before that, I'd had it for more than 10 years. Well over 10 years I had my old cell phone. It was a Samsung 3. I went from Samsung 3 to S23.
Wow.
Samsung 3 to 23.
Yeah, I remember, and you hung on to that thing for a good long time.
Yeah. But the Samsung 3 that I had for over 10 years, the camera on that phone has a higher resolution than the cameras on the Mars rovers.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. You'd think we'd be able to do better than that.
Well, it's
You make a good point. Like, it has to survive the journey. But, I mean, cameras are pretty robust these days. And, the technology is so good.
Well, again, strapping it to a rocket. Okay. It's surviving 6 months in space.
Point
taken. Re-entry and a rough landing.
Yeah.
It's got to be very survivable. I mean, you can, I'm really into cameras. You know, I get very excited about photography.
Yeah.
And you can buy these cameras. They're designed specifically for, you know, for working on a construction site. you know, if you require a camera for that, if you're, you know, an insurance estimator or something like that, and you need to take photos, you know, if you're going to be on an active construction site or something like that, you want a pretty rugged camera that could survive a lot. Mm-hmm. And, you know, shop around for cameras that are designed for that kind of work and look at the specs on them. They're much lower than
okay.
you know, your typical consumer camera.
Yeah. Well, but things are progressing rapidly, though. So, I mean, obviously, the cameras we had in the 90s are better than the cameras we had in the 70s, and the cameras we have today are better than the cameras we had in the 90s. So do you think we'll hit a threshold of digital capability where it'll just be too hard to deny that we've got really good quality images and really fine detail of the surface of Mars?
I think the images will get better, but I don't think that's going to eliminate the ambiguity
not until you got boots on the ground. That's where I stand.
And you know, most of the really interesting stuff on Mars is probably beneath the surface.
Mm.
That latest Mars rover, Perseverance.
Yep.
You know what NASA included on that?
What, a drill?
Ground penetrating radar.
Oh yes.
Yeah. That it's constantly dragging along with it.
Right. So did you pull up any of that data? I neglected to do it.
I would not be able to interpret that data if I had.
Well, that's curious. I wonder if anyone else in this sphere has looked at that data and maybe knows more than we do.
Maybe.
I'd be curious. I didn't stumble upon anything regarding that this week. So I don't know. Maybe those aren't even publicly available right now, that data.
Could be.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's not something I looked into deeply because I wouldn't be able to make sense of radar data.
Yeah. Yeah.
Even if I had access to it.
I'm sure there's somebody out there who can, you know.
Oh, probably.
Yeah. Okay, so back to the face. Back to the face. So what do you think? I have a hard time writing off the face as pure pareidolia. It looks too good. Like, it's well-proportioned. There's well-proportioned eye sockets, nose, mouth, in the appropriate places and proportions and pretty good symmetry. Yeah, you know, a little drawing in your notebook. It's very good.
Thank you. Thank you.
And you just briefly mentioned there's the larger Cydonia complex where there seems to be other indications of structures near the face where it starts looking a lot like our own archaeological sites on Earth, whether it be the Giza Plateau or
places
in central Mexico, you know.
I mean, I was just talking earlier about when I did finally, after an hour of searching, find Cydonia on that map, how striking it was, how striking that whole region was when I saw it, because there's all these structures with just interesting geometry to them, like regular geometry. There's pyramids, there's these very symmetrical looking mesas with interesting designs seemingly carved into them. You know, there's kind of a diamond shaped plateau just to the east of the face, and it's got an indent in the center of it, mm-hmm. that is like a perfect hexagon.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I agree. Really strange stuff. I mean, pyramids, I find hard because, you know, if we're looking at a ruined world, you know, that hasn't had any active life on it, and everything's been in ruins for potentially hundreds of thousands or maybe millions of years.
Billions.
Billions of years. Any hill could be a pyramid, you know? I was looking before the show started this morning, a couple hours, like I said, I was just floating on Google Mars trying to find weird stuff. And just about any any decently sized hill could be an ancient pyramid.
Well, we what's the name of that pyramid in China?
I forget
what it's called, but
I don't know.
I think it's one of the largest pyramid structures in the world.
Yeah.
But it's so ancient. I mean, it's
nobody knew it was there.
No one even knew it was there. I mean, it's been excavated, and it's definitely something, you know, we built.
Yeah.
But for a long time, it went unnoticed because it's so ancient and it's become so eroded that it looks just like a hill. But Mars is not Earth.
Okay.
And even over, you know, a time scale of billions of years, you know, Mars barely has any atmosphere left.
But it does have like planet-wide dust storms, you know, once every couple of years.
But those erosive forces are going to be a lot weaker than here on Earth.
Yeah.
So, you know, even, you know, it's strange to think that, you know, if you know, our civilization collapsed tomorrow.
How long would it take?
You know, how long would it take before, you know, our modern infrastructure, you know, just completely, you know, was taken back by nature.
Yeah.
And like we were never here. You know what some of the longest surviving things on Earth would be with no humans to maintain them?
Pyramids.
Our ancient megaliths, our pyramids.
Because they're made of stone.
Yeah.
You know, everything made of concrete will, you know, it might last maybe 200 years or something at best before it all crumbles.
Yeah. You know, the...
Well, I was thinking, I thought it was a perfect example. I neglected to point it out to you. But, you know, on my laptop here, it's a Windows laptop, so it throws those random images of places around the world, different nature photography. And it was that constructed island in Dubai. What is it called? It's like a resort. It's just basically a massive resort, but it's like,
it's a constructed
man-made island in the shape of a palm tree.
Yeah.
And I was like, that's perfect. 1,000 years after humanity's long gone, someone could look at Earth, you know, and see that island and go, what is this structure?
Mm-hmm.
Right? Why is it in this very deliberate shape of a tree? You know, why did they do that? And it makes me think about the Mars face, right? And like one of the arguments is, well, it's way too big. We don't build on that scale. But that island chain in Dubai, it's massive. It's huge. You would see that from space. You would definitely pick that out and go, that can't be a random geological event that's obviously built.
And the thing with structures on Mars and people saying, you know, it's too big to be artificial. Well, even a Bronze Age civilization.
We build on that scale. Yeah.
You know, and if there was a civilization on Mars, they could build on an even bigger scale because they're fighting against 1/3 of the gravity.
Yeah, good point.
Think of the things probably, we could build.
They're probably, you know, a weaker by the same degree in terms of muscle mass.
Well, I mean,
because their bodies aren't fighting the gravity either, so it's like,
yeah, I mean, I've you know, heard it said that, you know, if we ever went to colonize Mars, you know, if human beings started being born on a Martian colony, they would quickly evolve to look very different than humans here.
They'd be a lot taller.
They'd be a lot taller. They'd probably be twice the height of, you know, an average human here because, you know, they evolved to have a higher center of gravity because they're fighting 1/3 of the gravity.
So, yeah, I'm just going to debunk my own point here. But, yeah, from a pure muscle standpoint, you know, rocks would be lighter to you and I if we went to Mars today. But the average Martian, it would probably be a comparable difference, right?
Yeah.
But technology, a lever, it would be that much easier to, you know, a lever is still a lever.
Yeah.
You know, and you're going to be able to lift heavier things in lower gravity.
But I mean, not only could they build on a larger scale, they would out of necessity, you know.
Right.
If I were twice as tall, I'd probably want a house that was twice as big.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Well, and this might be a tangent from where you wanted to go at this point, but I did want to bring up, at least briefly, we talked about Project Stargate, the CIA's psychic spy program.
Yeah.
And there was one incident with Joseph McMoneagle, who was one of these psychic spies, and someone, I think from a different branch, not the CIA, but it was someone from the Army, had come and did a session with him this one time where he was tasked with trying to remote view a location on Mars.
Mm-hmm.
And in the distant past. He didn't know this at the time, right? Because they're kept blind, right? They're just given a set of coordinates and told to try and view the target without knowing what the target is. And normally they would do very, you know, mundane kind of military targets for the CIA. So he had no reason to think that this particular session would be any different. But what he came back with was, you know, very much a scene in his mind that looked like an archaeological site, you know, on Mars, where it's a very barren place. There's ancient pyramids.
Yeah.
With really big rooms, he described. He's like, this must be a new pyramid that's been discovered. I've never heard of a pyramid like this that was so large and with such large rooms in it. And he got an impression, he said, of people that were long gone or a dying race that is now perhaps in hibernation. Mm. And they were giant. He said they were, you know, almost twice as tall as the average human being. And basically their civilization was ending. Their epoch of existence kind of was coming to a close. And he discovered after the fact that what he was viewing was Mars. And I think the Farsight Institute has kind of gone back and done more work on Mars. It's really hard because definitely there's a lot of evidence, veridical evidence that you can give to remote viewing. But when you pick a target like that, there's no way to verify it, at least not in the current moment.
Yeah.
Again, just leads me right back around to the only way to get veridical evidence of those accounts is to get some bodies on the ground.
Yeah.
And actually investigate.
Yeah. I hope we do that soon. I hope Elon can pull it off.
Yeah. Yeah, I hope so too. He seems less focused on that particular goal.
Yeah.
But I think if
he's got a lot of other stuff going on right now.
Other things on the go, yeah, and you know, fair enough.
But I mean,
sometimes I wish he would focus on
it's
rockets.
Frustrating that we haven't had humans on Mars yet, and you know, we've had the technology to do that since the 80s. We've had the technology to put human boots on the ground on Mars since the 80s or earlier.
In our lifetime, space exploration has been kind of politically stagnant.
You know,
which I want to retract that, because no, a lot of progress has been made. I feel like there was in the 60s and 70s, there was so much fervor and excitement around space travel.
Yeah,
and
the space race.
Yeah, and just our technological, you know, rate of progress seemed to be exponential, you know, just since the Industrial Revolution. And I mean, manned flight had only been achieved like just one century prior to us landing on the moon. It just seemed like there was going to be no end to that progress. And I think we ended up kind of in a generation that floundered a little bit, where progress was still being made. I don't want to detract anything from the people that work in these fields and have done really amazing work. Like, just the history in the past 30 years of Mars exploration, just researching this week, so much has been done. So I don't want to minimize that work and those achievements. But in terms of manned exploration of space, it feels like we hit a brick wall.
Yeah, and a lot of that seems to be politics. You know, I mean, why did we go to the moon, really?
To prove a point to the Russians?
Yeah.
To get the high ground?
You know, America wanted to reach the moon.
Don't try it,
because
Russia.
Because
I've got the high ground.
They had to do it before Russia did, you know. Once that, finish line had been crossed, you know, interest in manned spaceflight quickly fizzled out. It's dangerous. It's expensive. So we...
Well, and I think the proposal, I think I know where you're going with this. The proposal that came, I think, in what, the late 70s, early 80s, for a Mars exploration, a manned mission to Mars, came into Congress at something like $450 billion.
Yeah.
Because they had to build the ISS and they had to build a station on the moon first. And there was all these components that needed to be in play for this really complicated 30-year project to get us to Mars.
But then yeah. In the, was it the late 80s or early 90s, enter a man named Robert Zubrin. Would you like to talk about Robert Zubrin?
I think I'm going to hand it to you. I think you've done more research. I'm a big fan of Robert Zubrin and his story.
You know what?
Really interesting character.
You probably have more to say about Robert Zubrin than I did. I just wanted to briefly touch on him and Mars Direct because it's such a frustrating story.
Mm-hmm.
So Robert Zubrin, he was an aerospace engineer. He worked at Lockheed Martin, and you know he you know NASA would contract Lockheed Martin to you know help them design the mission parameters and you know all the cool tech that goes into their missions to space.
Yeah.
And Robert Zubrin, he came up with this idea to, you know, launch a manned mission to Mars, to do it cheaply. I think at like a quarter of the cost of anything else they'd come up with to go to Mars. And I think the whole mission could be completed in 11 months.
Yeah.
You know, there and back in 11 months.
And he had a lot of support.
Initially. He had a lot of support. Yeah. And, you know, when you dig into this mission design, it's really brilliant, you know, because it's hard to launch a rocket into space with much on it.
Yeah.
You know, there's the rocket equation, you know, the heavier you make the rocket, the more fuel you got to put into it, the more fuel you put into it, the heavier the rocket's going to be. And it's very difficult to achieve a balance. So designing a spacecraft that could get to Mars and back was exceedingly challenging. So Robert Zubrin's idea is that, like, we're going to do two launches. We're going to launch an unmanned ship to Mars. That will be the return vehicle. It's going to park on Mars and
it'll create its own fuel for the return trip.
Yeah, it's not going to bring any fuel for the return trip with it. It's going to bring something like 8 tons of hydrogen with it. And it's going to land on Mars and it through this, you know, electrolysis system, it's going to combine that 8 tons of hydrogen with Martian CO2, which there's lots of CO2 on Mars, and it's going to use that to synthesize over a long period of time. It's going to take a while, so they have to just park it there for a while.
Yep.
It's going to refuel the fuel tanks. And, you know, it doesn't take a huge, big giant rocket to lift off from Mars because, you know, 1/3 the gravity.
Yeah.
So I said, yeah, we could do this if we got that vehicle there and just parked it there for, you know, 6 months. We send the, you know, the crewed launch over there.
Yeah.
A fully fueled return vehicle
ready to go as soon as they land.
Yeah, ready to go, waiting for them.
Provided they can land in the right spot.
And yeah, and he had so much support.
It really kind of reignited the fervor of the Apollo days for a little while within those circles, right? And it was something that should have been a lot easier for Congress to approve to make it actually feasible from a cost and time commitment to make it actually happen, opposed to this. And I think that's kind of what we saw in the 80s, 90s, and early 2000s is just bureaucracy kind of stagnated, because what happened then is now you know, there was other projects that were not going to be given budget because, well, if we do it this way, you don't need the ISS, you don't need the moon base, and that was going to cost people on other projects. And so he started bleeding support. He started losing support because people wanted money for their own projects.
Yeah, and the other thing that's happening at the same time is, you know, a project like this, if it's actually greenlit, you know, the politicians get involved and the bureaucrats get involved, and everyone wants their own little pet project included on the mission.
Yeah.
Their own little pet science experiment, their own little gadget they want to have tested out. Yeah. And suddenly the budget just balloons like crazy. Yeah. And it's back to that.
Yeah, and it's stagnant.
Four times what it should have cost. And at the same time as that, probably why we, you know, it feels like a manned Mars mission has been 4 years away for the past 30 years.
Yeah, and that's true.
And what happens every 4 years in the United States? There's an election. There there might be a change of administration. The administration changes.
And their attitude, NASA changes like the wind.
And, and I mean, NASA very much operates at the pleasure of the president. I mean, the president will personally appoint whoever the next director of NASA is.
Yeah.
And so every 4 years, 4 to 8 years, NASA's entire, you know, mandate changes.
Yeah.
Their budget changes drastically.
But it's a civilian organization.
And they can't do anything long term. They can't do anything ambitious.
Yeah, it's the same problem you see everywhere in our world today. It's just you can't cut through the red tape to get anything really accomplished. Like, how long have we been trying to build the Green Line in Calgary?
Oh, God.
Right? Just as a local example. It's a mess, right? And it's like, how are we supposed to do big things like move our civilization off world if we can't even get a train line built, you know, for despite ourselves, you know?
And that's, I mean, that's why I have hope in, you know, the private sector going to Mars before, before NASA. You know, I think SpaceX is going to get there first.
Yeah.
Because, you know, their mandate doesn't radically change every 4 years.
Yeah. Yeah.
And they'd probably do it a lot more efficiently.
Because Well, it's everyone, it's a competitive industry, right?
And
it's like you need to do it cheaper than Bigelow can do it or Virgin Galactic can do it. You know,
and they wouldn't have, you know, every politician out there, you know, trying to pork barrel in their own pet project into the mission.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I agree. I agree. But anyway, I really... like, I feel for Robert Zubrin because he's been on this mission for himself for decades, trying to make this happen. And he's, you can tell, like, he's a very impassioned individual.
Yeah, even today. Even today.
Right? And he never stopped. He never gave up on this dream. He really wanted to see it happen. And I know he's, like, SpaceX has consulted with him.
Yeah. I think he's a bit ambivalent about SpaceX and Elon. He feels like they stole a lot of his ideas.
Well, and they did because they're good ideas, right? And I think just the Robert Zubrin's, from what I can tell, his personal political ideology and Elon's have diverged. So I think they maybe were working closely back in early SpaceX days and maybe not so much anymore.
Yeah.
But Elon was smart to go to him and say, like, help me achieve this, right? You've done a lot of work on this. Let's figure out a way to make it happen. So I still have hope that it could happen. I feel like I think you're right. I think we could have done it in the 80s. And it's really, it's red tape. It's been red tape holding us back this entire time. But I think eventually we'll get there.
Yeah.
And then we can finally take a little hammer and chisel and go to that face and chip away at it and find out what's going on there. Throw a stick of dynamite down the nose.
Oh, dear.
Wake up those Martians. Okay, what else you got? I know you got more in your notebook there.
Well, I mean, like I was saying, the face is kind of the beginning of all this ambiguity, but it's not the end. And I got a short list of just some notable
All right,
things that
okay.
have been seen on Mars. It's just a few.
Yep.
There's so many of them.
Yeah, I agree. There's a few really, really curious ones.
Yeah,
Okay, so hit me.
I was showing you a picture of this one just before we started recording. And you can follow along at home.
Yeah.
Just go into your Google image
Yeah,
search.
this is really a show. I was thinking about this. You'll find we have the most thorough show notes on this episode than we've ever had on any other episode, because I feel like this is an episode that would have been better served to be visual,
Yeah,
because there's
definitely.
so many images we're talking about. But we're putting a ton of references in the show notes. So yeah, if you're listening, maybe even just hop over to the RS and open the show notes and look at some of the pictures we're talking about.
Yeah. But if you're not able to do that, just go into Google Image Search and type in Aztec Idol Mars. And you'll see a fascinating image. It was captured by one of the rovers. It's a giant boulder that it looks like an Aztec carving of like a stylized human head. It's kind of like it looks like
Yeah,
remember
you can see like an eyeball or
yeah
like teeth.
remember that episode of The Simpsons where Bart donates like Mr. Burns some blood to save his life, and at the end of the episode, like to thank Bart, Mr. Burns decides to give the Simpsons a present, and he gives them like this giant Aztec carving.
Right,
He's
yeah.
like, "This is Extrapolapa kettle." It looks kind of like that.
Yeah,
It looks
yeah.
kind of like that. Actually, interesting story about this, because I was trying to do some analysis on these images. I was uploading them
Oh, yes.
to a my AI chatbot,
Okay.
and I was saying, "Tell me what this is. Like, analyze this image." And this one was interesting because I uploaded this image to GPT, and I
Okay.
said, "What is this? Identify this." And it said, "Oh yes, I know what that is. Absolutely. That's an image from Mars captured by this specific Mars rover on this specific date. It
Right, yeah.
it's a picture of a very interesting looking rock. Very, very interesting indeed." I said, "Damn it, chatbot, you know too much." So what I did was I cropped the background out of the image. I just, tightened it so you were
So you can just see the rock.
just see the rock. You couldn't see any of the background at all.
So you lose the
And
context
yeah,
for the
you can,
photo.
yeah.
So you're hoping a GPT won't be able to recognize that this is from a
Yeah,
Mars mission. Yeah.
it won't recognize the specific photo. It's just gonna analyze
The
the photo
object.
for what it is.
Yeah.
And I said, "What is this?" And it said, "Well, it's difficult to say with certainty because of the low resolution of the image. But it appears to be either a stone or wood carving of a stylized human or animal head in the
Oh,
style of the Aztecs."
very interesting. Very interesting. So an objective machine intelligence was able to, I guess, verify, because ChatGPT, I'm assuming, is not a victim of pareidolia in the same way that our human minds are. I think it can, because it is trained on
Yeah,
image recognition and it's looking for certain features.
it's
But
trained
it's,
to recognize patterns.
yeah, but it doesn't have the psychological
Yeah,
baggage of a human
it
brain
doesn't.
with biases. It's just from what it can see of the image, it's identifying this as a carving
Yeah,
or a relief.
it doesn't have the evolutionary pressure on it to favor, if there's ambiguity, favor seeing a face.
Yeah.
It doesn't have that pressure on it. It's going to be objective.
Yeah, and it's still programmed with pattern recognition to
Yeah.
identify things. But that's really interesting that it would come out and say, well, this is appears to be a carving.
So,
Very interesting. Excellent use of AI. Excellent work, investigative work
oh,
again.
I do some more with AI coming up.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
There's other notable features on Mars. There's what looks like a statue of a woman, on Mars seen by one of the rovers. There's an image of what appears to be like a perfectly rectangular doorway built into a cliff face.
Yeah, I've seen that one. I saw that one. Did you see the spider one or the crab one?
No, I didn't see that one.
That one's interesting. I'll see if I can look it up. I don't think I have a prepared image of it, but I'll try and find it after the show for you. It's really interesting. It's like there's a rock face and there's a little crevasse, and then it looks like there's some kind of organic crab-like creature with appendages, and one of them's even like coiled up in a loop.
Oh, cool.
And it's like sitting over this opening, almost like, what do you call those spiders that pop out of their little holes in the ground? Anyway.
I don't remember.
It kind of looks like something organic. I watched earlier this week, I was watching some analysis online of some of these different anomalous things. And I guess that one, a little bit debunked, because if you break down what the data actually of the camera, of what it receives and how it breaks down the image, I don't know, it seemed a lot more ambiguous than what it looks like at face value, which is the problem with a lot of these things, right? But there was one, I know you've got more there, I'll let you continue, but I couldn't find this image either, but I'll do my best to explain it, because it was really curious, where it basically looked like a brick wall, where it looked like you had stacked layers with kind of gaps in between, just like you would expect a brick wall. And a lot of people wrote this off as, well, that's just erosion is going to create that pattern. But the problem was, it wasn't all jagged and weird. It was all in one flat face. And there was another flat face on the top. So it really looked like you're looking at like the foundation of a building built of brick, right?
Yeah.
And it's like, yeah, erosion could cause those weird little gaps to make it look like there's bricks, but they wouldn't all align on a flat plane, right? To make the face of a wall like that. It looked really curious. I tried to find a still of it because I just saw it on a video, but I couldn't find it. But it was a really curious image.
Yeah, a lot of the really interesting stuff you see on Mars, like I was talking about Cydonia earlier, and what makes that whole region so fascinating is you see so much like symmetrical, regular geometry in, you know, a lot of the rock formations there, the in air quotes rock formations. You know, I was before, like earlier this week, as I was kind of getting in the mindset to, you know, do this episode, I was watching Cosmos.
Oh yeah.
The good one, the one with Carl Sagan.
Yeah.
And I was watching the episode on Mars, and it's interesting this came up in that episode, because he was talking about you know, how would an alien species, if you know, an alien craft were looking at the Earth, what would be its first hint that this planet was inhabited by an intelligent species? And he was kind of looking at satellite images, and it's like, you know, if we look at this image of New York or Washington or Tokyo at this resolution, you know, you can't tell that there's any life there. You know, but as you start to zoom in and increase the resolution, and he's looking at different satellite images, you know, once you reach a certain resolution, all these regular geometric patterns seem to crystallize and pop out at you. You know, you start seeing, you know, the regular grid patterns of our roads, or, you know, circular irrigation and farmers' fields, or, you know, just the regular geometry of our buildings. And he said, ah, yes, it seems like this planet is inhabited by a species with a passion for territoriality and Euclidean geometry. And he said, intelligent life on Earth first reveals itself from space through its regular geometric design. And that's what is so striking about Cydonia, because you see so much of it, but it's so ambiguous, and that's what makes it frustrating, because none of it is perfect when you zoom in close enough. And I mean, of course, billions of years of erosion have taken place. So you can't, it's would be degraded to the point where, can you tell, is that a natural, you know, mesa, or was that built by someone a long time ago? It's very ambiguous.
Okay, is it, can we jump to the square?
Yeah, so this I want to talk about the square now.
The square, if you've not seen this, it's definitely the most recent Mars anomaly of recent memory. You know, it just popped up a couple of weeks ago. Our buddy Elon commented on it. He seems to think it's curious. Again, you see it largely being dismissed as pareidolia. And I find it really weird, because, and just really a shallow dismissal, because people are saying, well, it's an altered image, is because the frame is highlighted. It's not actually a square. But if you look at the raw image, it absolutely is a square. That specific area hasn't been highlighted and lifted out in the same way. But that was obviously an intentional manipulation just to highlight what you're looking at. Mm-hmm. But you have two opposing right angle corners on opposite ends of the square. It really looks like the base of a building.
Yeah, and there's enough connective tissue between those corners where it's very much a perfect square.
Yeah.
Or almost perfect square.
Yeah.
And the
guy. And I saw Neil deGrasse Tyson. Okay, and I hate to throw mud at anybody, you know, but again, a couple times this week, I've found videos of Neil deGrasse Tyson just very flippantly and kind of condescendingly, you know, blaming everything on pareidolia and kind of talking down to anyone who might think otherwise, and in reference to the square as well. And I find it really intellectually disgenuine, because he was pointing out, well, if you look in really close, it's sure there's a right angle there, but it's all craggy like a rock, right? And it's like, well, yeah, if it's been sitting there for a couple billion years and it's in ruins, it's not going to be a perfectly flat line, right? But you can obviously see that there's shape there, right? It just comes across as really disgenuine and condescending, and I have a bit of an issue with Neil deGrasse Tyson. But anyway,
so
go ahead. You were saying
it's frustrating, because it's a frustrating thing to even look at, because I was trying to do some research on this square. Interestingly enough, you know where that square is? Do you know what region of Mars it's in?
No.
It's in Cydonia.
Oh, okay.
Very near the face.
Oh, wow. How close?
I don't know the exact distance, but it is in that region.
Oh, okay.
Where we see so many other...
So it adds to that same mystery.
Yeah, we see so many other artificial-looking structures. That's where we see that square. But it's frustrating to look at, because I was trying so hard to find... You know, I wanted to throw AI at this again, but I wanted a clean image. And it's so frustrating, because almost every image you see on the internet of that square has been altered in some way.
Yeah.
People have edited it to, you know, make it look more artificial or less artificial. Yeah. And it's hard to actually find a clean image of it now.
And that's what I mean when a picture will never be good enough, especially this day and age. It's only getting harder and harder and harder to tell from an image, because everything is doctored. It's so easy to manipulate images.
And I can see why people do that. I don't think most people that manipulate that image are trying to deceive anyone. They're just trying to highlight their point.
Yeah.
You know, you can, you know, that image you were talking about where, you know, it was obviously like a hard edit where like the image, the portion of the image that's inside that square, it's, you know, it's got almost a different resolution than what's outside the square, you know, and it definitely jumps out at you.
Yeah.
You know, when looking at that, I don't even know if I found a clean image of it. I don't even know if the image I found was unedited, but it was definitely a soft edit, you know, it's probably just a contrast adjustment.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, you know, good enough. So yeah, I wanted to throw AI at this, but I didn't want to start with just having it look at the image. I wanted to start with a hypothetical scenario. And I wanted to break this down into steps. So this structure, they've calculated its size. It's you know, 3 kilometers across.
Okay.
So I started asking chatbot, because I didn't want to let on that I was talking about this specific thing on Mars.
All right. Yeah.
Thus, they get a repeat of that when I gave it the image of that Aztec head. Like, oh, yeah. This is an image of this interesting looking rock on Mars taken by this specific rover. I didn't want to.
You didn't want to tip your hand.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I said.
It's funny that you got to play these little navigation mind games with GPT to get it to do what you want.
Yeah, sometimes it's frustratingly human-like in that way. So I had to kind of take ChatGPT by the hand through this, and I started with, okay, what are the odds? What are the numeric odds that a 3 kilometer long straight line? I'm not going with a square quite yet, but a straight line, mm-hmm. you know, would form naturally as part of natural geology, just a 3 kilometer straight line. And it says, well, I mean, it depends what you mean by perfectly straight. And I said, okay, it appears perfectly straight at an image resolution of 6 meters per pixel, which is the image resolution, I looked it up, of the Mars orbiter that captured this image.
Okay, excellent.
I said, it would appear perfectly straight at that resolution. And I didn't jot this part down because I wanted to kind of expand on this. And it said, you know, the odds would be basically this, you know.
What were the odds?
I didn't jot this part down.
Okay.
I'm kinda,
not important. All
right. Yeah. This is assuming it's on Earth, though, not Mars.
Okay.
And you know, it wanted me to give it a time frame. You know, this geology, this geographic feature forms, what are the odds under what time frame? And I said, okay, given a time frame, and I said 3 billion years, which is the time frame that our best estimates show, you know, 3 billion years ago is when Mars was, you know, warmer and had liquid water on it. Uh-huh. I said, so this would be 3 billion years old. What are the odds? And it gives me some, you know, on planet Earth, we'd expect to see, you know, over that time frame, you know, this many of features like that appear.
The crust would move, there would be floods, droughts, everything.
Yeah.
There would be massive change to the surface.
Yeah. So at this point I said, what about on Mars? What are the odds, you know, given this time frame on Mars, I'm seeing this feature. What are the numeric odds this formed naturally? And it said, you know, given the size of Mars, given that time frame, and given the properties of Mars, you know, its atmosphere, its rates of erosion, you would expect to see over the entire planet 60 features like this that formed naturally.
Oh.
3 kilometer long straight lines that appeared straight.
Interesting.
At that resolution, you'd expect to see 60 of them that formed naturally. Those are the odds.
Okay. And we're still just talking about straight lines.
Just a straight line.
Yeah.
And I said, okay, what about a square?
Yeah.
You know.
4 straight lines.
4 straight lines connected at right angles.
Yeah.
What are the odds that would form naturally over this time frame and would appear, all those lines would appear straight at this image resolution on Mars. What are the odds? And one in 10 to the power of 24, which is a septillion.
Yeah.
The odds of such a structure forming naturally are one in one septillion. And a septillion is a number that's hard to visualize.
Yeah.
So I had to do a little bit of work to make this easy. The number of grains of sand on Earth. That is not a septillion, but you can begin to imagine it. If you took all the grains of sand on the entire Earth, multiply that by 1,000, that is a septillion.
Wow.
So those are the odds. So
it's a very high likelihood that this is an artificial structure. Based on our current ability to observe it, based on that assessment.
Yes, with an if or no, with a but.
Well, that's incredibly clear.
Because,
can you unpack that?
Like I said, this is like everything on Mars. It's so frustratingly ambiguous because then I came to the image, and this is why I wanted a clean image. I upload, after having this conversation with the AI, I uploaded the image and I said, would you consider this a perfect square?
I'm guessing it said no, because it's not a perfect square.
It thought for a really long time.
Yeah.
And said, it said something very non-committal, like, right, not really, but given the time frames we were just discussing, it very well could have been at one point.
Which, it's funny because, like, you go through that amazing little labyrinth of reasoning, right? And you come out with what you just immediately, come to the exact same conclusion when you just look at that image.
Yeah.
In your brain.
Yeah.
In a fraction of a second, you look at that image and go, oh, that's curious. I'm not 100% sure, because, you know, it's of a certain quality and it's obviously degraded, but there could be something there. It's the exact same result, right? And it's the human, like, gut-level response, right? You just took a much more complicated way trying to verify one way or another, but you end up at the same place.
But, you know, right?
Which is all to say, which my point is, like, I think it's intellectually lazy to dismiss it out of hand.
Yes, I agree with that.
There's obviously something curious going on there, even if you can't say exactly what it is and exactly why it's there. It's obviously a very curious structure.
Yeah, and you know, again, I come back to it. It's also frustrating in its ambiguity, and you know, I'll hit you with another,
because immediately your first thought is, well, we should send someone over there to have a closer look.
Yeah.
Right? Which is the exact thing we can't do, and we haven't been able to do for 30 years.
Yeah, and I get so frustrated by that fact, because we're never going to know for sure.
Yeah.
You know, there's enough smoke there that it is,
yeah,
it is worth investigating.
Yeah.
You know, you can't just dismiss it out of hand. It's worth investigating. And so I get really... You know, I get really emotional when I talk about it because it's so frustrating.
Yeah.
But I'll hit you with another Carl Sagan quote.
Okay.
You know, when and he was actually talking about Percival Lowell when he said this. He said, you know, when we have strong emotions, we're likely to fool ourselves.
Mm.
You know, there weren't any actual like canals, as at least not as Lowell described them. We haven't seen those kind of canals on Mars. He was referring to that. But yeah, with something this ambiguous, like even as I was doing this little investigation, I kind of fooled myself a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Because I texted you on Thursday night. I said, I'm on to something really good. I think I've discovered like some amazing proof of something.
Yeah, yeah.
Some proof of something huge. Because I was talking about how I started with a line. Like, what are the odds like a straight line would form naturally?
Yeah.
And I kind of started there, you know, on Mars with this image resolution. And I originally got this crazy number, like this crazy huge number. It was like 10 to the power of 37.
Right.
Which yeah. is, you know, it's a number like 1 in 10 to the power of 37. That's odds so small they're not even really worth discussing.
Yeah.
There wouldn't even be time.
So there'd be like no doubt.
In a thousand universes yeah. for something like that to just happen randomly.
Yeah.
And I was like, and that's just the line. I haven't even gotten to the square yet.
Yeah, yeah.
And I was really excited about that. And then I was looking at it the following morning, and I'm like, oh, you know what I did? I totally like mistyped the size of that thing.
Right, right. So instead totally of, threw off the calculation.
Yeah. yeah. Instead of like, 3 kilometers, 1.5 miles, instead of like, 3 miles, 1.5 kilometers, instead of 1.5 kilometers, I had typed in 150 kilometers.
Right.
So that really threw things off. Yeah. I was all excited yeah. about it.
And you cracked it.
I totally proof. Fooled myself.
Yeah.
But then I came back, like, well, that's disappointing. Well, I'll still continue with it.
Yeah.
And I still continued to,
know. The important thing is you're honest in the fact that, oh, I made a mistake. I checked my work. I'll go back and fix it, right?
Yeah. I was so excited when I saw that. I'm like, oh, my God. Unbelievable proof.
I was it's like, a good thing you know didn't, what? You I should send it to press
I should,
before
I
you
should,
checked it.
I almost want to bring a mic with me on Saturday just so I can drop it after I say this.
And you were maybe a little too excited.
Yeah, that's why mic drops are never a good idea. Yeah. You might have to, timidly walk back out on stage and pick your mic back up.
Well, that's still really great work, though, by the way. Yet again, really great investigative work. Like, you went through a lot of effort there, so really good stuff.
I'm always trying to find unique uses for AI.
Yeah, and that's a great one, right? It's like, take your own cognitive bias out of the equation and get an objective analysis from our machine overlords.
And it's our machine overlords are just as unsure
or at least
as everyone else,
at least non-committal.
Yeah,
yeah. Okay. Wow, we're doing really great for time. I think we should start to think about wrapping. Is there any highlights? We never got to Phobos.
Yeah, we never got to the. I mean,
do you want to touch on Phobos really quick before we wrap up?
Phobos 2. We could always do a segment on Phobos 2.
That could be later. A story all on its own.
I don't want to rush through Phobos
2. Yeah, yeah, I agree with you. So maybe we'll save that.
I think that
could be its own little nugget to unpack on its own. Yeah, that could almost be a whole episode.
I think a good place to leave it is, well, I'll ask you. Do you think there is the ruins of an ancient civilization on Mars? And if so, what do you think happened to them?
I think the possibility is there, absolutely. And I think some of the things we see in some images, there's a lot of really vague ambiguity around a lot of them, a lot of subjectivity. But there are enough really genuinely curious images that just your brain can't help but get stuck on and go, oh, that is really weird. That is anomalous. and definitely Cydonia, the face, that is not 100% debunked in my mind. I still think there's something really interesting happening there.
Yeah.
And yeah, I 100% can visualize if Mars was once a warmer, wetter planet, in antiquity that there could have been a civilization there. It could have been a branch of our own civilization. Like going back to the Project Stargate stuff.
Yeah.
Like what they saw were these super tall giant humanoids, which they would be, we know from the gravity.
Mm-hmm.
And you can make connections to the Nephilim, you know, from the Bible.
Yeah.
Like giant people that, yeah, you know, fell from the heavens. You know, there's a lot of connections there that I think it's, you can't easily dismiss those.
No.
You know, so it definitely makes me think. I think that's why Mars has captivated our imaginations for so long and wonder for so long, is that if there's anywhere in the solar system where there could have been another people like us, it would have been on Mars a couple billion years ago, at least, right? Maybe sooner, who knows? Yeah. Maybe there's a population still there, like McMoneagle said, in hibernation. You know, maybe they realized their civilization was ending and they're all sitting in cryotubes like in Aliens, you know, in some cave under the surface waiting for us to stumble along.
Yeah, they could all be, you know, plugged into a computer living in a virtual reality down there, like in a Philip K. Dick book.
Yeah, yeah, that's right. That's right. There's no end of possibilities, right? So, and yeah, I think that's why it's so in our culture. You know, in our popular entertainment, is because it just evokes that curiosity. And, you know, yeah, we just need to get there. We just need to go check it out once and for all. Can you imagine, though, we finally get to Mars and we can't start building cities because the entire planet becomes an archaeological preserve?
You know what? I think...
We would anyway. I'm sure we would anyway. But, a revelation that would be.
Even if it's not feasible for us to establish a permanent presence on Mars, you know, that's still very debated.
Yep.
But I think we need to visit and we need to see what's there.
Have you ever seen The Expanse or read The Expanse novels?
No.
It's really great because it's people kind of describe it in short as like the Game of Thrones, but in space. Right? That's kind of, there's different factions. Mankind is spread throughout the solar system,
mm-hmm.
But it's very politically divided, you know, and there's people been living on Mars for generations, but they've become very politically divergent from the people of Earth.
Which would happen.
Within two generations, you know?
Yeah.
I'd say the people would no longer be identifying as being from Earth. You wouldn't have that kind of social cognitive connection to that place you came from anymore. No,
they'd have their own unique culture.
Yeah. Yeah. That would happen really quickly, right? Yeah. And then there's other folks that live in the outer solar system and, you know, around...
Did you know? Just sorry to interrupt.
Oh, no, sorry.
Did you know that, you know, we have a permanent presence on Antarctica? It's a very small, like, but permanent human presence.
Yeah.
Just in, like, research outposts. But it's so remote and so isolated that this you know, group of scientists that is constantly cycling, you know, through living in Antarctic research outposts, they've developed their own accent.
Right.
That is just totally unique to that people station. That live in Antarctica.
Yeah. So it happens so fast. Yeah, and I don't know why I brought that up. It just popped into my brain. I think probably one of my favorite examples of kind of what space exploration could look like, or exploration of our solar system politically, you know, in the next couple hundred years as we hopefully take those first steps out. But yeah, anyway, I don't know where I was going with that.
Well, I hope we can land people on Mars and actually start, you know, digging into some of these things. I think it would give some much needed context to our place in the much larger story of the universe.
I agree. I feel like we spent an hour and a half getting absolutely nowhere. But hopefully it was entertaining. So yeah, I guess we'll call it a wrap there. Thanks to everyone for joining us for another week. This has been episode 9 of the Common Anomaly podcast. Oh, I did want to say right at the very end, I realized this week that YouTube, its information doesn't feed to RSS. So we have a whole separate following on YouTube than we do from the regular downloads that are happening on Spotify or Apple or anywhere else. And it's got its own little separate following there. People, do me a favor, like, subscribe. It costs nothing. Leave a comment, because it really helps just push the show out a little farther for more people to find it. Would really appreciate it if that's how you're absorbing the show. Just for whatever reason, the audio quality on YouTube is the worst of any of the platforms. I don't know why. It takes forever to upload. But anyway, just a little note. If you want to help out the show, do me a favor. Find out if you're watching on YouTube. Leave a comment, like, and subscribe. And same for anywhere else. Yeah, I'm still working on the merch thing, so maybe we'll have some giveaways later. Ooh. If we can get people to encourage people to do a like and subscribe and a comment, that sort of thing. I don't know. Just throwing it out there. All right, we'll leave it there. We'll put a pin in it, and we'll see you next week for episode 10. Good night.